Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Keegan Thompson looking to put the game away. The opener of a 3-game set. He kicks and delivers. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Ball game over. Keegan Thompson with a huge strikeout of Dylan Cruz. And the Nationals leave 2 to end the ball game. Cubs hold on. They beat the Nationals 7-6.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Hold on to your butts. That's what it was last night in the ninth inning. Our regular bullpen's not available. Here's Keegan Thompson for you. So we had the Keegan Thompson game. Heard right here on The Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670. On the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network, Zach Zaidman calling the final out. The Cubs won. The Cubs are 69-66 after surviving that Nationals game. They're 5 games out of the last wild card spot held by the Braves. The Mets are 2 games ahead of the Cubs in that race as well. More impediments. Best baseball of the year being played by the Cubs. Best show by the lineup. And they really haven't gained any ground. So, let's go to the guest hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois, and let's find out what esteemed columnist Paul Sullivan, in the wake of the news of the Tribune, thinks about this best Cubs run of the year and best run of the offense, and they're getting nowhere closer except to the end of the season. Hi, Sully, what do you think?
Oh, all's great. All's great. I'm sure you're pretty excited about it.
Sully, you need to control your enthusiasm. I'll give you some Xanax if it starts to get out of control here.
I guess, you know, if you're a Cub fan, you have to be happy that at least they're showing that they can hit and that they can win some games consistently. But, you know, it's kind of a little late. So there's that.
Well, they've hit like actually like nobody ever before. In the last 8 games, this is from OptiStats. This is what baseball does to us. The Cubs offense has 98 hits, has scored 80 runs, has delivered 43 extra base hits. They've stolen 18 bases. They've hit 14 home runs. No other team in Major League history has done that, all of that, in 8 games. And there's still 5 games in back of the Braves, who are like beaten up, and how are they doing that? So I feel like we're in Dumb and Dumber. You're telling me there's a chance? But well, there is.
3 of those games were against Yasmani Grandal, so the 18 steals. should probably have an asterisk there. I mean, how do you come up with something that is so specific to those numbers?
I don't. I just had it on the tweeter machine, so that's where I got it.
You didn't type that into some system and find all that.
No, I leave that to Optisport, so they could do it, Sully. That's what they do. And
obviously it's a good streak, but you got to consider that they started with the Tigers, and then they went to the Marlins, and then the Pirates, and now the Nationals. So, I mean, it's kind of skewed a little bit there.
Yeah, well, you could say it's the balanced schedule eventually, and then for all this 18-game run against crappy teams, they're going to find themselves playing the Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Phillies, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's good to see. You can't complain if you're a Cubs fan that they're not playing well, but, you know, you've got to look at the competition and look at the time of year it is, and that's looking grim. I mean, if they finish the season like one game back, is that enough? Or is that good to people that, oh, well, at least they finished strong. Let's go buy those season tickets for next year.
Well, they'd like that. The Cubs would like that. They'll take that. Hi, like us. Like us on Facebook. Like us in your checkbook. Give us your season ticket money.
But it's kind of annoying that they didn't do this earlier. I mean, that we heard for 4 months, you know, oh, yeah, we've got an offense here and proven players. Look at the back of the baseball cards, and no one did it. And now they're doing it. And obviously, you know, the big part is Pete Crow Armstrong and Miguel Amaya at the bottom of the order starting to hit. And that's certainly a reason for optimism for next year. But overall, I mean, it just makes me think that they're going to just bring back the same team next year now if they finish strong, even if they don't make the playoffs.
So who do you blame? Do you blame the players, or you want to break up the – it's not just one, but if you're going to break it down to percentages, who gets the bulk of the blame for the way this Cubs season has been so frustrating, and a day from September, from the last month of the season, and the Cubs have, according to Baseball Reference, 7.7% chance to make the postseason. So how do you parcel out blame?
Well, I would have to say it's on the players. You have to give Jed a lot of it because, you know, he did put this bullpen together that didn't pan out, but he did call an audible during the season, and it's changed most of those guys, and it's been a lot more effective lately. But, you know, guys like Swanson, he hasn't really had a good year overall. Even Nico Horner, good fielder, but he's got no power. He's like hitting 250. That's not going to do it. And these are guys that they're counting on. Suzuki's playing very good now, but where was he the first, 3 months? Bellinger, all of them. None of them have played up to their potential. And certainly what we saw at the end of last year when Bellinger and Suzuki basically carried the load when they got back into the race in July, August, and early September, you thought that would carry over this season, and it really hasn't.
Don't know what they're going to do with their pitching, because Craig Counsell said there's uncertainty hanging over the pitching, whether Jordan Wicks pitches tomorrow and instead of Tyone, or how they arrange this. And Counsell made a point of saying, yeah, there's some uncertainty with Kyle, or Kyle himself has some uncertainty. What would you do with Kyle Hendricks? What do you think they're going to do? How would you handle this?
Well, as long as they think they're still in the race, I think they're going to have to think about putting him back in the bullpen. Not that Wicks has had a great rehab stint. He's been okay. His last start was pretty good. But you've got to get him in the rotation, at least give him a chance, because I think even when Kyle is on and having a good day, the most he's going to do is like 5 innings before he starts getting hit around. So, you've got to change that. And I would think the bullpen, the drastic choice would be you know, letting him go. And I don't think they would ever do that. I may be wrong, but I think he's just too important a piece of the team's history at this point for them to do something like that. I mean, I know they did it with Hayward a couple years ago when they just shut him down and said, okay, we're going to pay you, but, you know, just don't do anything. I don't, you know, I guess they could do that by putting him in the bullpen and not using him a whole lot, but yeah, I don't know. If you still think you're in it and you're keeping him in the rotation and he's really not consistent, then you're kind of asking for trouble.
Well, the rosters get expanded tomorrow, but in a weird way, baseball, I guess, doesn't want to pay people to play the game after a long season. When they get all beaten up, you could really help a team. A team could help itself by bringing up a lot of bodies from the minors, but they're not allowed to. So I don't know. What do you expect?
Well, that was the change that the, you know, teams wanted because it was getting so ridiculous. There were so many players in the bullpen that, you could use like 10 players a game, 10 pitchers a game. Not that that's unusual anymore, but so I think that was a good move, honestly. Having the call-ups reduced to, what is it, 28 now?
Yeah, a position player and a pitcher, and that's – I got no problem with that. You made the rule. They got to face at least three batters, so they're there. So be wise with your selections.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll pick – Gold Wicks will be one. And, I would assume they'd bring up another hitter. I don't know who that would be at this point. I did see the Sox might bring up Iriarte, which makes sense. He's their top pitching prospect. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But according to what counsel said yesterday, they still are going to play this as though they're in it until the very end. So if that's the case, then, I don't think they're going to, even whoever they call up hitting-wise, I don't think he's going to get much of a chance to play.
Well, I think eventually they will because they all seem to. And then we finally saw Amaya do what he's supposed to do. And oh my God.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bethancourt, where did this one come from? So they're eventually figuring out ways to do it, and the offense is figuring out ways to hit. What have you thought of the – I mean, this was not
a stellar trade deadline for Jed Hoyer. It was not a guy who was going to commit, and it was not a guy who was going for anything. The biggest name would be Paredes, right? And,
yeah.
And what have you thought of his time as a Cub?
Not much.
I mean,
he hasn't given you much more offense than Morel, if any. He is definitely a better defensive player, but, you know, he's not a gold glover. So, you know, it's a marginal improvement. Getting rid of Leiter, I guess, was probably the right time for that because he seems to be struggling with the Yankees. You know, what they got in return for him, I don't know. It didn't seem like that pitch that they already sent him down to the minors. I don't think he's, like, the answer there. But I do, as much as I like Morel, you know, his striking out and hitting 190 wasn't helping the team. So, you know, I could understand the reason for doing that.
Talking with Paul Sullivan in the wake of the news columnist for the Chicago Tribune right here on Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, home for your Cubs, but also discussion of the White Sox. I went through, like a Bears fan would go, I went through the White Sox remaining series. Win my friend, lost my friend, that's a win my friend. And I was looking to make sure they did not win more than 8 games, because I would dearly love to have the disgraced chairman hold this record. I want this on his sash. I want him to wear this crown. Are you rooting for the White Sox to do this? Because I certainly see a path to where they will not win 40 games. Do you want them to do this? Are you rooting for this? Do you think this would be a good thing?
Well, I'm not rooting for anything, but story-wise, it would be better if they didn't. You know,
why would be a good story if they
no, I mean,
make
if they
history.
Got the record, if they didn't win the games, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sorry. They got the record.
Yeah.
And didn't win the, how many games they need to win now? 8, 9? I can't remember.
Yeah, 8. They're 31 wins. They can't go above 39, and that would give them the most losses in a season. That would Mets were 40 and 120.
Yeah.
And so the Sox have to win 39 or fewer games.
Yeah,
and they closed the season against the Tigers, who lost 119 in 2003.
Well, at this point, it looks like they're going to obliterate the record. On pace for like 125.
Yeah, but here's the thing: what they're doing is they face Oakland. Oakland was actually supposed to be the Sox, and they face the Angels twice and the Guardians. But they're 5-5 against the Guardians inexplicably, and baseball is such nonsense that they could win 2 out of 3 from the Guardians. So it's becoming perilously close, and then they close against the Tigers, who have to decide that they want the White Sox to hold that dubious AL record instead of their team, their franchise.
No. I think it'll be settled before they get to the. I think they'll settle it before they get to the Detroit series. Oakland is not a bad. I mean, not a good team, of course, but they're not a bad team in the last couple months. I would say, you know, they should sweep the Sox. The Angels, okay, that's going to be a tough one. Maybe they can only win 2 out of 3 from the Sox. And I don't know. I think Cleveland will be going, you know, they're in a race now with the KC and the Twins. So I don't see them, you know, playing the same against the Sox. So they should sweep that series. So I think the team you really have to worry about is the Angels.
I think
that's going to be a problem for
them. I think Cleveland's still trouble. I think Cleveland, and they play the Red Sox, and the Red Sox are unreliable. So the Red Sox, who should be sweeping the White Sox, could easily drop a game. I don't trust them. And then I think it ultimately comes down to the Tigers. I don't think it's settled before they get to face the Tigers at the end. I think that's the best storyline. And I'm certainly hoping that the Tigers help the White Sox into history, erase the Tigers' ownership of the American League, and make the White Sox the greatest disgrace in baseball history.
Well, yeah, that that's all that we have left. But it's going to be interesting to me that, you know, they're going to become a national story. They already kind of are, but once they pass
I would say 1-10, and they only have like 10 losses, the countdown begins. You know, you're going to have a lot more national attention. I could see, you know, network news and, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, everyone will be like, you know, in on it. There's already outlets talking to the 62 Mets. There's only two guys left from that team, and both of them have said, I don't know if you've read anything, but they don't want the Sox to break their record, not because they like the record, because they don't wish that on anyone. But I wrote a story for tomorrow that I don't think that even if the Sox do break this, you know, it's not, they're not going to be as famous as the 62 Mets, because people for some reason liked the 62 Mets and thought it was all funny and everything. And I don't think people are going to like the White Sox or want to remember them.
I certainly want to remember the Lenin Sosa game, and I want to. Well, I mean, just it's just it's they are they're an unlikable bunch. They're an unlikable ownership. They're an unlikable organization, unlikable franchise. Your chairman insults your fans. He laughs at the fans. We're not going to be in the Ohtani race, all right? You're in the 62 Mets race, the greatest disgrace in baseball. And earlier in the week, I wanted Sean to get Jay Hook. That's who I wanted, because the two guys who were, those are the two guys, Craig Anderson and Jay Hook, are the two 62 Mets who were with them the whole team, the whole time. Yeah. Like Ed Cranepool was there, but he was only there for September. He was one of the September call-ups. So he was only there for the last month.
I associate him with the 69 Mets more than the two Mets.
Yeah.
But did get those guys. Those guys are going to do a lot of interviews now. And I would argue with one thing. I don't think the players are unlikable, honestly. They may not be, like, you know, incredibly likable, but they're okay guys. There's not many bad people in that clubhouse, or if any, that I can think of, now that Lance Lynn is gone. So, it's, you know, I could see you saying that about the owner and other things, but not like the players are unlikable, a bunch of jerks. They're just not a good team.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. But when you start with Casey Stengel and the 62 Mets, and he goes out there to get introduced and tips his cap and birds fly out from under it, it's just that's how it all starts. And they were wonderful, and they were happy to have him. And they were destined to lose because the expansion rules were changed.
Yes, exactly. And it was an expansion team to begin with. And they even, like you said, they changed the rules because the American League rules made it easier to win.
Right. And the Angels were the team that won. Oh, wait, what is Dean Chance doing? How are they winning games? Are we, they paid us a bunch of money so we could beat them every game. Yeah. Well, that's what the Mets were for. Sully, I appreciate it. Always love talking with you.
Okay, Rosie.
And by the way, I'm going to make you feel old now.
Uh-oh.
That both Gonzo,
not hard.
Gonzo and G-Dub Cub had reported, at least I saw it on my Twitter feed, the Nats are calling up tomorrow Darren Baker.
No way.
Way.
Oh, wow.
Dusty's kid, the one Dusty used as a shield on his lap when he mismanaged in 2000.
Darren is a great kid. He's a great kid. That's cool. Now, you know who's next, though?
No.
Drake LaRoche.
Oh, my God. There's leadership there. That's what the White Sox need that.
I thought I saw he's playing college ball somewhere. I can't remember. I had a decent college team.
Has he been drafted?
Nah.
Had he been eligible for the draft and went back to college?
I don't know. Google it. You can, I'm sure Drake LaRoche. Well, the first clip you'll see is Adam Eaton talking about it.
Talk about unlikable. All right. That's what Sean just did that to get us the information. And you're right. Yeah. That's exactly the first item, top of the SEO.
I told you.
Thanks.
Lucky guy.
Thanks, Sully.
All right.
Take care. Paul Sullivan. That's wonderful. We're talking Cubs, and I want to talk to you about this. Take note. Join 670 The Score at Rally House in Wrigleyville this Thursday. That would be September 5th. Matt Spiegel in the afternoon show will be doing their show from there 2 to 6 p.m. Stop in and win prizes and shop for all things game day. Visit rallyhouse.com to find the location nearest you. We'll take a break. When we come back, we have quite the anniversary for a legendary piece of literature and film and a salient question to ask about that. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now, you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby.
Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it. Do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, warn the Chiefs.
Owns. Owns.
Owns. Owns.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
We have penetrated the cultural zeitgeist. Welcome back to Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum. It's Labor Day weekend. Laboring for you. Hope you're enjoying it. Hope you're chilling. Hope you're not doing nothing. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. First item in the cultural zeitgeist. Today, The Wizard of Oz turns 124 tomorrow. September 1st, 1900 is the publication date of the book. Now, it was printed earlier in 1900. L. Frank Baum, the author, had cobbled together the pages and gave it to his sister. But the publication date is officially listed as September 1st. So that's 124 years ago tomorrow. The movie came out last Sunday. So that makes the movie 85 years old. We've all seen it, right? There's no spoiler alerts. I'm not worried about giving a spoiler alert. But the fact that we've all seen it makes this 1998 description of the TV listings written by Rick Pulido easy to understand. You remember TV listings? You remember kids explain to your, or parents explain to your kids what TV listings used to be in like a newspaper, right? So here's what was on. Quote, The Wizard of Oz, 8 to 10 p.m. TCM, Turner Classic Movies. And the description was this. Transported to a surreal landscape, a young girl kills the first person she sees, she meets, and then teams up with three strangers to kill again. That was the description.
What?
That was the description of The Wizard of Oz. Transported to a surreal landscape, a young girl kills the first person she meets and then teams up with three strangers to kill again. Written by Rick Pulido. It's true.
That's not wrong, but it's not the way I would have described it.
Rick Pulido is the TV guy who wrote those, and he turned that kind of description, brevity, snark, one-liners into a syndicated movie piece, that a syndicated newspaper piece about movies, TV listings, things like that. It would run regularly back. Again, parents, explain to your kids what newspapers were and how they used to have syndicated pieces. So here are a couple other capsules by Rick Pulido. The movie was Mary Poppins. An eccentric nanny hired by a wealthy family, subjects the children to a series of psychedelic experiences and cult-like character-building exercises. The Untouchables. A federal agent in Chicago hampers the work of an enterprising American job creator. That is so good. Here's the best. Interview with a Vampire. Tom Cruise is a soulless recluse who lurks in the darkness and sucks the life from all who come near him. He's also in this movie about a vampire. That's so good. Rick Pitino giving him full credit. He didn't always get it. Somebody else was given credit. But I have a question for you, Sean, and those of you in the fellow suckage ears. Is The Wizard of Oz more of a horror movie than parents want to admit? And here's why. We showed our kids, I think Allie was 5 and Brandon was 3. Right around there. As his mother was putting Brandon to bed, he asked, "Mom, where do the flying monkeys come from? Do they come out of your throat?" And he had nightmares that night. And he was 3, which I thought it was an adorable movie. Like sometimes the family builds the whole night around watching this. And go, I never thought of it that way, the flying monkeys. And funnier still in our business, if you remember back when Boris and Bernstein, and they had Steve Lavin on. It may have been the Heavy Fuel Crew, Boris and McNeil. And they may have been, they had Steve Lavin on. He was coaching at UCLA. And they lose a game. This is the city, John Wooden. And he called the media, the flying monkeys are all out in force. But it never struck me. Sean, do you remember? Do you remember Wizard of Oz, how old you were when you saw it? You remember what your thought were?
Yeah, I remember it being like on TV at one point watching it. I want to say I was probably like 6, 7, maybe somewhere around there, maybe a little bit younger. And I think I remember being a little scared of the flying monkeys too.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was like more of like the costume. I don't know. Just like them moving around with whatnot. But I mean, I like the movie, but yeah, the flying monkeys were a little weird to me.
I ran this by some other people and I equated with what I could never understand, this fear of clowns. Like here's these creatures dressed up and strange and heavy makeup and different kinds of makeup.
See, I was weird too. Even like my mom would take me to go like see Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. I didn't want anything to do with any of them. I think it was just like that me not being able to tell who they really were would freaked me out a little. But even like, I don't know, I guess it's not that weird to sit on a bunny's lap and think that's weird. So
no, now you can get paid double for that. 815 texture. I was terrified of the flying monkeys when I was that age. The same goes for my sister and I when we saw it, same ages. Yeah. See, that's the thing. I never knew. Okay. Just thought I'd bring that up. Do we have an Omaha? Can I get an Omaha? Can I get an Omaha?
Omaha, Omaha, Omaha. Omaha,
there you go. Okay. Oh, no, we did have one thing that we wanted to play because the Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz was legendary in all the discussions we've had about the White Sox ownership. We did find something from the Wizard of Oz that would be sports appropriate.
Why, if I had a brain, I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
That's it. Okay, so this came from Ian when me and my otter were at Little Otter Addie's birthday party a couple weeks ago. I know it was the beginning of August. So as one does at a one-year-old's birthday party, talk turns to the World Yo-Yo Championships. And then an event, a sport, really, I had never heard of. Sean, have you ever heard of the World Chess Boxing Championships?
Chess boxing?
Chess boxing. So like C-H-E-S-S.
No.
It's a hybrid sport.
Sounds like it.
As you might have guessed. Yeah. That combines the discipline of chess and the discipline of boxing. I did not believe this to be a real thing, but Ian, at Little Addie's birthday party, was insisting it was, and he turned out to be true, to be right. Two combatants play alternating rounds of blitz chess, you know, to fast-paced chess, right? And boxing until one wins by checkmate or knockout. It's also, you can also win by penalty, but that's, I don't, you know what. Typically, the events are held in a standard boxing ring using standard amateur boxing equipment and rules. The chess round is also played in the ring. So they set up a table in the middle of a boxing ring, and you're seated if you're one of the combatants, and after each round, you play chess. The governing bodies of chess boxing are the World Chess Boxing Association and World Chess Boxing Organization, the WCA, the WCBO, and boy, they just can't get along. And chess boxing was invented by French comic book artist Enki Bilal and adapted by Dutch performance artist Lepe Rubing as part of an art performance. It has since grown into a competitive sport. There are championships, and even on Glassdoor, you know, the place you go looking for jobs and salaries, they answer the question, what is the average salary of a chess boxer? The estimated total pay for a chess boxer is $51,228 per year, with an average salary of $44,266 per year. I don't know if that's accurate. I've never heard of this. But I will tell you this, this chess boxing thing, that needs to be an Olympic event for LA in 2028. It needs to be an Olympic event, and Snoop and Mike Tyson need to be on the microphones for it. That's what needs to happen. Omaha! 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 Ghanaian sculptor Pa Joe, not Joe Pa. But we are talking death here. Pa Joe makes coffins, both human size and mini sculptures, that are modeled after real live objects that were important to the deceased. He had a show at New York City's Superhouse, and his work was described as a second generation fantasy coffin maker. Now, I'm not seeing that in a lot of resumes. I don't
fantasy
know what
coffin.
Is that LinkedIn? Does Indeed have that? But apparently, it's an artistic tradition of great importance around Ghana. They're known as proverb boxes. These are end of life, you know, vessels, even though when we say vessel end of life, it's like we're thinking of where the urn for the ashes. That's not. But the way the Ghanaian beliefs of life and death are, Pa Joe has meticulously carved and painted figurative coffins representing various living and inanimate objects symbolizing the deceased. For instance, he's done an onion coffin for a farmer, an eagle coffin for a community leader, and a sardine coffin for a fisherman. That's the way people celebrate death in Ghana. And they don't see their work as morbid, even though it sounds morbid. It's like, oh, right? But more celebratory. It reminds people after your death what you did while you were alive, that kind of thing.
So would your coffin, if this guy were to make one for you, be burnt ends? Would that be it?
Burnt ends, you know what? It would be in Big Ed's. I believe they got the air conditioning fixed. Oh. So you can go to Big Ed's newer, bigger place, newer, bigger burnt ends. I think that'd be great. That would really test Pa Joe's craftsmanship.
Be tough.
But, as a giant burnt end of a coffin, what would your end-of-life vessel be?
Ooh, I don't know. Probably something Cubs related. Yeah, you know, I'm lame like that, but you know, I don't know. Wrigley Field shaped. I don't know. A trough. Actually, it would be a trough. That's what it would be.
A trough, like at Wrigley, be a urinal.
Yeah,
that's what you would be.
I'd be the trough. Yeah.
A 229 texter. So Rosie gets a Rolling Stones lips coffin. That would the tongue. That would be outstanding, right?
That
the
would
Rolling
be awesome.
Stones. Lips and tongue hanging out. That would make a great-looking coffin.
See, that's better than the trough. I should have thought a little bit.
Right. That would, yeah. So, if you were a musician, which you could, like a jukebox or a guitar, right? That would be a thing. That would be the thing. If you were to have a coffin like that. And I think Pajo, I think the Ghanaian, the celebratory part of life is you would, yeah, what is it? But I think as a burnt end, as one of the world's greatest burnt ends influencers, the greatest, really.
You're the only one I know.
Being much too modest before. And you go to Big Ed's. Yeah, I guess that would be it. I would be a burnt ends or it would be a Rolling Stones tongue coffin. Thank you, Texter. Omaha! All right, take a break. When we come back, I do not want to, especially this holiday weekend, do not want to let down the Wake and Bake Club. We certainly have something for you. If you're a White Sox fan, you certainly need the Wake and Bake Club. You need to wake, you need to bake, you need to distance yourself. And we kind of were talking about it, right? Because Sean, all of a sudden, Sean is Grody's clout in Wrigleyville for the ability to park in Wrigleyville for the Pearl Jam concerts. That's like gold. What could you have gotten on Amazon instead of giving them to Grody?
I don't know. There's guys around us that sell the tickets for like $30-$40 sometimes to park.
Now, you keep saying parking tickets, which has a different connotation. Sure. Are these parking passes? Like you get a towing free card?
They're basically like stickers you put in front of the windshield, but they just look like ticket stubs to me. That's why I keep calling them tickets.
Oh, okay. Because so did Mark.
Right. I think it's because I keep calling them that.
Well, okay. So the Wake and Bake Club will be meeting. If you can find Mark at Wrigley, he knows which way the wind is blowing. He'll follow him. That's how you play your outfield, and you get your get in the way of the contact time. We'll take a break before we get out of here. It's Saturday Suckage. Wake and Bake Club, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670, The Score, in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can. I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man, Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
Hey, smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time, did a gummy bear. I was like breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
What a perfect way to get into the Wake and Bake Club, Bubba, before we get out of here for the Labor Day weekend. Snoop Dogg. That was Nate Dogg. But it comes from Snoop Dogg. They all be dogs. So he goes to the Olympics. He carries the torch. He carries the broadcast. He's brilliant. While he's there, he goes to Amsterdam and he opens a coffee house. And he opens a coffee house just weeks after he opened his flagship shop in Los Angeles, his old stomping grounds. The name of the flagship, now in Amsterdam, is SWED. What does SWED stand for, Sean Sears?
Smoke weed every day.
Exactly right. SWED, smoke weed every day. So it's a two-story coffee house. It opened up, graffiti all over the walls. And Amsterdam embraces the same thing Snoop does, who's on our Mount Cushmore. And it will be filled with product line will honor Tupac. Tupac Shakur, the iconic artist who Snoop befriended before he was killed in a shooting in 77. It was Tupac who gifted Snoop with his first blunt.
Phew, that's just the way my thing moves.
Okay, before we go, 98 dispensaries in Ohio began selling recreational pot recently. Ohio legal weed sales topped 11.5 million in 5 days. Somebody, quick, tell Joakim Noah there's now a reason people would vacation in Cleveland. And a happy
Cleveland
Labor Day.
Sucks.
A happy Labor Day, a happy, safe, healthy Labor Day to everyone. I will be back on Monday on Labor Day, 6 a.m., me and Hub Arkush, if you can handle all of that.
I don't know. We'll be following you afterwards with Rami Makhlouf.
Rami Makhlouf will be there from 10 to 2.
That's right. And then Chuck Swirsky, 2 to 6.
The Swirsk. I wanted him as a guest, but now he's going to be on the air because it was 45 years ago. This month, that the Swirsk brought talk radio to Chicago.
How cool is that, man?
Right. I mean, he should talk about that. I wanted him to talk about it on the show. He just couldn't work it out. And now he's got the show, so you call in and ask him that. You want to play some music so we can do this?
Stay longer?
Do this. No, I do not want to stay longer. Nor do I think the audience wants me to stay
longer.
They've
had enough of us, huh?
They would, if I did stay longer, they would have me into one of Podjo's coffins, no matter what it looked like. What do you think, Ryan Horvath, host of BetMGM Tonight, 105.9 FM, 6 p.m. You could hear him and Brad Evans. Mark Grody was here, Pearl Jam enthusiast. Paul Sullivan, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Thank you, Sean Sears. Thank you, everyone who listened. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
it.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.